sometimes it's hard to face up to what we're actually feeling. I don't know if that feels difficult for you sometimes. Sometimes it's hard to face into, to actually enter into what we're feeling. And so we would just rather say things like, oh, it's fine. How many people in your life, though, do you know? Maybe it was a mom or a dad. Maybe it was an older sister or maybe a younger brother. Maybe it's a really good friend who's maybe still in your life or maybe was once in your life. Maybe you, if you could encourage them, maybe if you had a wish for them, your wish would be, no, I wish that you wouldn't just use that phrase, it's fine. I wish that you would actually enter into it and maybe even deal with it. Maybe face up to it. Maybe face into it. Why? Because it will create a better you. It'll help you get to a healthier place in life. Running from it actually sometimes is the worst thing we can do. But we're all tempted to do that at different points in our lives. And that's really what this series is all about. I want to talk about in this series, I want to talk about this word hygiene. For a little bit, you know what hygiene is, of course. What do you think of when you think of hygiene? Maybe you think of showering, brushing your teeth, wearing some antiperspirant. I don't know. I mean, it's the practices that we keep on a daily basis to keep ourselves healthy, right? And this is just a small basket to represent the hygiene industry in our world. It's huge. Not the basket. This basket's actually quite small. Some of you are like, yeah, I couldn't fit what I use on a daily basis in that basket. If you were to just think about all the products that you use, whether it's Olay Fresh Out Last Purifying Birch Water and Lavender Poo, shampoo, that is, yes. Thanks, Olay, for paying for that sponsorship. That product placement, charging big dollars for that here. This is some Living Proof Forming Paste, some perfume. We've got some Crest. That's really helpful, right? I mean, there's so much in here. I could go through and we could talk about each one of these products, and I could tell you how little I know about every one of them. Or we could just summarize this by saying, we spend a lot of time, a lot of attention, a lot of energy, and a lot of money on our physical hygiene, don't we? This is not a male thing or a female thing. No, the hygiene industry is booming. In fact, when we started to pay more attention to our hygiene over the last couple hundreds of years, great things have happened. The death rate has lowered, life expectancy has risen, the rate of disease has lowered, all because we paid attention to our hygiene, all because we started paying attention to those habits that we do on a daily basis to keep ourselves more healthy. So in this series, though, I want to ask a simple question. I want us to at least wrestle with a pretty simple question that might have some more complicated answers and I think probably some profound implications. What would change in our lives if we spend as much time on our emotional hygiene as we did on our physical hygiene? What would change in our lives if we spend as much time thinking about those emotional habits that we have, those emotional practices that we have, not just our physical habits, our physical hygiene? What would happen if we got all up in our feelings? You know what I'm talking about? Kiki, do you love me? That's the question, you know? What if we got up in those feelings and asked some of those more serious questions, some of those more profound observations about what it is that we're really feeling? Because most of us, the route that we would prefer to take is we'd rather just kick the can down the road, right? I mean, if we were to lift up that rock and look underneath it, we'd go, oh my goodness, I don't like what's under there. I don't like what's in there. Some of you might even say, no. The people in my life are better off that I just avoid my emotion. The people in my life are better off that I just stuff my emotion, that I just deny or that I just fail to admit to what I'm really dealing with. But we all know, though, the longer you wait, the worse it actually gets, right? I mean the later we choose to deal with our stuff, the greater the consequences of it. The longer we let it exist, the worse it usually gets. Later problems actually become greater problems. This is what my dentist keeps telling me. I never got my wisdom teeth taken out. I don't know if you did. And when you ask people their experience getting their wisdom teeth taken out, there's a wide array of answers, right? Some people are like, oh, not that big of a deal at all. You know, did it over March Madness, or I wanted to binge a couple shows over the weekend, and so I just did it on Friday, took care of it in a couple days. I was fine by Monday. Other people are like, worst week of my life, worst month of my life, worst year of my life. It was horrible, right? So all that to say, I've been scared by the idea of it, and so I've got my wisdom teeth in my mouth. And every time I go to the dentist, my dentist keeps telling me, hey, you probably should get those out at some point. And then I usually say, well, you probably should stop saying that because I'm not going to, you know? And then the dentist is all like, well, it's going to cause you trouble. And I'm like, well, it's not. It hasn't. I'm fine, you know? And what the dentist knows is the same thing that we all know in the emotional world, that, hey, eventually it will cause you problems. And the longer you wait, the worse they're going to be. The longer you allow it to be there undealt with, the worse, unfortunately, it's going to be to actually deal with it. How do we know this? Because we all know people. We all have family members. We all have friends who never dealt with their emotional hygiene. They never established patterns and habits in life. And there's loads of different reasons why. But so much of it is because we just don't like the way that might feel, right? To have to deal with our feelings, to get into our feelings. I saw this bumper sticker recently that made me laugh out loud. Maybe you have this on your car. I don't know if this is you. I thought this was really funny. There are two things in life that I don't like: change and the way things are, which I thought was very funny. I mean, when I saw it, I thought that is so true, you know, that we don't like. We don't like for things to change, but then none of us are content with the way things are, which demands change. But we don't like that because we don't like the way it's going to feel, and we don't like what it's going to require of us, and we don't like what it's going to demand from us. And so we just allow things to persist. We just allow things to just continue at status quo. And then we just say things like, oh, well, it's fine. Here's my assumption, though, and I don't think this is a big assumption, but I'm standing here talking with you about this, that I have to assume a few things about you. I assume that the fact that you're here, or at Lake Oconee, or in Naples, or Southside, or wherever you are, the fact that you're here, the fact that you're watching or listening right now, tells me that you at least have a desire to change. You at least have something in you that says, I want more out of life. I'm not just okay with where everything is right now, which I admire that about you. I feel the same way about myself. Yeah, I feel like I'm not where I once was, but I'm not where I wanna be. That, yes, there is a gap between the person I want to be and the person that I am right now. And I would like to close that gap. I would imagine you want to close that gap. I'm assuming that's why you're listening. That's why you're watching. That's why you're here. But why wouldn't you want a better version of yourself? Do you know people in your life that don't want a better version of themselves? Yeah. And they're hard to be around. They're hard to deal with because you think, well, how could you not? Some of you actually, when you think about your emotions or your feelings of that broken relationship, that difficult season of life, that thing that happened when you were a kid, you don't want to have to deal with it because you feel like, well, I have a right to feel the way I feel. I have a right to be as angry as I am. And the truth is, for you today, you do have a right to feel that way. But it might not help you to stay that way, though, right? I mean, you have every right to feel however you want to feel. Some of you were like, nobody should tell me how I should feel. And maybe you're right. Maybe they shouldn't tell you how you should feel. You might have a right to feel that way, but it might not help you to stay that way. And that's what I hope that we'll have the courage to deal with in this series. Because we end up talking ourselves out of it. We end up talking ourselves out of feelings, the things that we know we feel. We say things like, well, we say things like, of course, it's fine. That's what the series is called. We say, it's fine. Which basically just means I don't want to have to deal with it. Or we say things like, it's just not that big of a deal. I mean, so what if I have some hurt from my childhood? So what if I have some pain from my parents' divorce or from my divorce or from the business that failed or from the club that I went out for in college that I didn't get into? Yeah, right, it's not that big of a deal. It's fine. And we just cover it up. Or we say things like, well, it's not my fault. I didn't do this. Somebody did this to me. But we all know, yeah, but you're the one carrying the emotion of it. You're the one carrying the feelings of it. And it might not be your fault, but it is your responsibility. And it's my responsibility, right? So I hope, my genuine hope for this series is that that we would be courageous, that we would be brave people, that we would not be afraid to look back in our past. This wouldn't be like a Blair Witch Project, you know, where we just turn out the lights and we try to go look for something difficult or look for something scary, only to find out that there's nothing really there. No, I don't want this to be a witch hunt. I want this to be a genuine season for us, where we face up to some things that we're feeling or experiencing so that we can all be healthier, so that we can be better versions of ourselves, so that we can be the kind of person ultimately that God wants us to be. You have a Father in heaven, no matter what you believe about him, you have a Father in heaven that loves you and wants things for you. But whether or not you experience that future, whether or not you experience him in that way, all depends on how willing you are to face whatever's in there, to experience the emotional hygiene that would lead to health. Jesus, there were a number of different places where Jesus tried to teach this, it seems, to the people that were following him. People were walking around listening to him teach, and over again, he's recommending a way of life where people actually use self-reflection or introspection to figure out what's really going on in here. There's one particular passage that I'm gonna read. We're gonna read together. I'm gonna show you that. I bet most of you, you're gonna be like, yeah, I mean, I've heard that before. But someone shared this to me recently, and I thought, you know what? I've never thought about it in this context. But I think what Jesus is asking us to do really is challenging, because it's difficult, because we'd rather just point the finger versus look inside of ourselves. This is at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is this huge, huge sermon that Jesus gave on the side of a hill to thousands of people. It's one of the most profound pieces of literature that has ever existed. We're going to look at the version that Matthew, the follower of Jesus, gave us. This is in Matthew 7, verse 3. Jesus said, hey, question for you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye, but you pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How common is this, right? And unfortunately, social media has just made this even easier, because now everyone feels like that not only do they have the opportunity to have a voice in this world, but they are entitled to a voice in this world, right? And so, unfortunately, we use these methods, these mediums, as a way to call out the speck in other people's eye. But Jesus said, hey, well, I would love to encourage you. Before you call out the other speck, why don't you turn around and look inside at your own plank? Now, don't just look for the little piece of sawdust, but look at the actual 2x4 that's in your own eye. He continues, next verse, he says, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? This is really helpful, especially this is helpful to anyone that's in a position that requires you to care for others. If you're in the medical field, if you're in the field of education, if you're a parent, or if you feel like you're a parent now to your parents, you have to wrestle with this, right? Because Jesus says, hey, how can you help someone else if you haven't done the work of looking inside of yourself, right? You can't carry others well until you care for yourself well. So what does he say? He says, well, here's what I would challenge you to do, you hypocrite. Easy, Jesus, you know? He's like, no, listen, seriously, because it's kind of hypocritical for you to call out the speck when you got the plank in your own. So why don't you go try and do this? He says, first, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to be able to remove the speck from your brother's eye. That if you wanna be a person that is helpful to other people, you've got to be emotionally aware of what's really going on inside of you. You can't care for somebody else's stuff. You can't help somebody else through their stuff until you've done the work to figure out what's going on inside of me. Maybe said it another way, you can't get to where you want to be until you know exactly where you are, right? Isn't this true in life? To get to where you want to be, you got to know where you are. When I was 15 years old, the mall in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where I grew up, got a Lids. I thought that was going to put us on the map. It didn't. But I thought it was going to. When I was in my 15-year-old mind, I was like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. I'm telling all my friends, I'm like, this is legit. You know, like, this is so real. This is a huge deal. I'm not like a huge hat person, but I just thought this is a big deal for our city. We're getting a Lids. And I remember that experience. Have you been to a mall lately? It's been a minute for some of you since you've been to a mall. But do you remember when you walked into a mall and you needed to find a store? Where was the place that you went first? To the directory. Yeah. And you find that big, you know, kiosk that sits right in the middle there across from the, you know, Annie's cinnamon pretzel place that just, oh my goodness, I feel like that's what heaven's going to smell like, you know? Just a mix between bread and sugar and cinnamon. It's lovely. You find that big directory, and then you scroll down, you find it. You're like, Lids, okay, A7. You know, then you go look on the map, and you find A7 on the map. You're like, A7, okay, I know where it is now. You know, it gives you that, especially, you know, some of the malls that are like multi-level, it's really tricky, but you figure it out. To be able to get there, though, what other information do you need? You got to find that star, right? Isn't it amazing how important that star is? You got to find the star that says, you are here. This is where you are. Why? Because you can't get to where you want to be until you know where you are. You've got to know exactly where you are so that you know how to go to get to where you want to be. I think this is what Jesus is challenging us with. Hey, don't you want to be the kind of person that is healthy emotionally? Don't you want to be the kind of person that knows how to regulate your own emotions, where you don't just fly off the handle at any little thing, where traffic doesn't just completely ruin your day? Don't you want to be the kind of person that knows how to interpret other people's emotions? Well, you know, if you stop and think about it, this is probably what he's feeling. This is probably what she's dealing with. Don't you think it would make you a better parent? Don't you think it would help you with your own parents? Don't you think it'd help you at work? Don't you think it'd make you a better manager, a better teacher, a better principal, a better leader? Of course it would. Well, to be able to get there, you got to start with where am I? Where am I right now? Not geographically, not like I need to know my latitude, my longitude, not like drop me a pin on Google Maps where I am. No. Do you know where you are emotionally? Do you know what's really going on? Jesus says, stop before you pick out all the other specks in their eye and turn around and face into what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, what your emotions are. So this week, all I wanted to do was just introduce this topic and then just say, hey, let's be people that are more emotionally curious. That's it. Let's be people that are more emotionally aware. And so if you were to say to me, okay, well, then what would I do then? That would be fantastic if you'd ask me that, because that's what's coming up next in my outline. What I would say is, I would say, great question. Let's talk about that. This is what I would try to do. This is what I'm trying to do. Number one, pay attention to your emotional pain. Your emotional pain, not T-pain, you know, but pay attention to your emotional pain. Pay attention to the things that have hurt you, right? Why? Well, because that's usually where it all is, right? It's usually around our emotional pain. Pain gets our attention. That's the point of pain. Somebody brings up something from your past, you know, they tell you about your childhood or ask you about your childhood and you're like, oh, I'll be able to talk about this. And then you just start crying, you know, you should pay attention to that. Somebody asks you about your first marriage. Somebody asks you about that breakup. Somebody asks you about your first business. Somebody asks you about your first job. Somebody says, tell me about your family traditions growing up. Whatever it may be, if it creates emotional pain, you should pay attention to it. That's the point of pain. Pain is to get our attention. Go, whoa, easy, watch out, pay attention. And what hopefully it does is it allows us to see our failings for what they really are, to see our challenges and our problems and our pain for what they really are. And more than even that, how it affects our soul. You see, the pain in your life affects your soul. I mean, it affects that core part of you. And you can't help take care of others until you've cared well for that. Now, I know in our world, some of the danger with this is that we get too self-centered, you know? There are people that have been on this exploration to try to figure themselves out for years. And honestly, the answer for some people in that situation that are too self-focused or too self-centered would be to go serve someone else. Because when you take the spotlight off your own life and put it on someone else's, you end up finding out that your problems really aren't that big, or it just helps you care for your problems better. But so I'm not advocating being self-centered. I'm not advocating being self-focused. I'm just advocating for self-care. I'm advocating for emotional hygiene. In the same way that you wouldn't say, it's fine, I'm just not going to shower for the next month. What? No, you should probably shower. Have you ever heard of gangrene? You know, it's a thing. You should probably check it out, you know? I don't know if that's what causes gangrene. I don't really know, but it probably doesn't. And nonetheless, it's just self-care, right? It's just emotional self-care. It's not being self-centered. It's just saying, I'm going to do the things that I need to do to care for myself. And it usually is found with our emotional pain. It's the art of self-reflection. It's the skill of taking yourself apart on a daily basis so you can figure out what's in there. This is what we see this particular author, this particular king, do over and over again. His name is King David. King David was one of the most self-reflective people in all of the Bible. King David was known as a man after God's own heart. And I believe that the reason why he was able to be after God's own heart was because he knew his own heart really, really well. One of the practices that I do on at least a yearly basis is to go through some kind of reading plan through the what David wrote in Psalms, because they're beautiful. It's brilliant. I love Eugene Peterson, one of my favorite authors. He says that Psalms gives us the permission to cuss without cussing at God, which I think is just a really fantastic quote. It's true. I mean, he's so honest about the way he feels toward God and what he's experiencing on the inside. If you are bored with the Bible, if you've ever tried to read the Bible on your own, you really ought to jump into Psalms, because Psalms, there's nothing boring about it. It's really invigorating how introspective he is. So I want to just show you, I'm going to point out a couple of examples. Here's what he says in Psalm 4, verse 4. David writes, when you were on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Which is not what most of us do, because most of us are like, well, do I have my phone with me? Can I scroll on my phone while I'm in my bed, you know? Well, he says, no, I would love to encourage you that when you're lying down at night, be silent, be quiet, listen. Why? So that you can know what's going on. So that you can know what you're feeling. So that you can experience the emotions that you're experiencing. Some of you are like, that sounds scary. It might be kind of scary. It might be difficult at first. But he says there needs to be a routine in your life where you're paying attention to that emotional pain. Here's another thing he says. He says this about five different places, but I pulled this one out of Psalm 139. At the very end of Psalm 139, he says, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts." Search me, test me. God, even take the thoughts that give me anxiety and search in there. And then see if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. See if there's anything offensive in me. In other words, you're the standard. This is my life. Would you evaluate, investigate, help me to be reflective and help me to compare it to what you would have for me? He's saying, hey, be curious about what you're experiencing. Have you noticed the power of curiosity in life? Curiosity is a phenomenal thing. The art of asking questions, learning to ask good questions, not just of other people, but of yourself, right? Why is curiosity so helpful? Because it breeds humility. It helps us find a place that's humble. Because in arrogance, people don't ask questions. Have you ever noticed this? Have you ever noticed that arrogant people don't ask questions? Why don't arrogant people ask questions? Because they already know everything. They don't have anything to ask, right? And people that are arrogant about themselves, they don't ask any questions of themselves. They don't ask, why am I feeling that way? What is actually going on in there? What am I experiencing and why is it there? It's the art of being ruthlessly curious with what you're really experiencing. David did it all of the time. And then after you pay attention to the emotional pain, what if you then, number two, decided, okay, I'm going to recognize a wide array of emotions. I'm going to recognize that we are emotional beings. We are created to feel things, and it's not just happiness, sadness, and anger. No, there's way more than that, right? Now, let me just say this. To the men, fellas, guys, gentlemen, this is so important for us because we've been told things our whole lives that aren't actually true. We've been told things like, well, feelings aren't masculine. Maybe some of you cried about something when you were a kid and somebody said to you, oh, come on, real men don't cry. Dry it up. Or maybe your whole life you've been told, hey, you need to man up. The way you actually should deal with your emotions is to just overcome them. Just man up and overcome your emotions. Quit acting like a girl, maybe someone has told you in your past. How's it going with that? How's that working out? See, I actually think one of the weakest things to do is just to man up. No, one of the most powerful things to do, one of the most courageous things to do is to go, no, I'm going to actually feel what I'm experiencing. I'm actually going to face into my emotions so that I can be a better husband, a better dad, a better coach, a better teacher, a better leader, or maybe a better follower of Jesus. But just manning up, disregarding them, deciding that it's fine, it doesn't actually work. No, there's a wide array of things that we all feel, and paying attention to that, learning to expand our vocabulary is actually really helpful. One of the things I use, this sounds elementary, but I use a feeling wheel. I keep this wheel, this image, around my desk at all times because I'm not great at feeling things. It looks something like this. You probably can't read all those words, so we zoomed in for you. Holler at your graphics team. Yeah, so you see things like, oh, I'm stressed, I'm bored, I'm scared, I'm proud, I feel accepted, I feel lonely, I feel hurt, I feel repelled, I feel criticized, I feel bitter, I feel humiliated. Learning to expand your vocabulary is actually a profound exercise that could change things for you. I've got a friend who actually was struggling with what he was feeling. And so he actually, this sounds crazy, but you know how quarterbacks wear those like sweat bands and then they open it up, they got the plays, you know, you'll see him in the huddle doing like this. And he actually had a list of feelings that he put on a sweatband and carried it around with him. Now, I'm not saying I would recommend that because that might look kind of weird, you know, but you could at least ask the question, why does that make me feel like I would be weird? Why does that make me feel judged that I couldn't do that? But it might actually be helpful to keep it with you, to keep it around you. And then once you pay attention to the emotional pain, once you actually enter in and realize that there's a wide array of words that we could use to explain what we're actually feeling, then you make a determination for the emotion. This is what we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks, is what are the habits that we need to have to make a determination for it? Because chances are, if you were to pay attention and go, okay, why am I feeling what I'm feeling? It might be because you're hurt and you should pay attention to that. Or it might be because you're hungry and you should get something to eat, right? It might be because you're really frustrated about something, or it might just be that you're exhausted and you just need to take a nap. But once you figure out what they're saying, you can actually make a determination for them. Emotions, I've heard it said, are like messengers. Emotions are like messengers. They're trying to tell us things. But the question is, will we be willing to stop and listen to what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling it? What am I feeling? And why am I feeling it? What am I experiencing? And what should I do with it? My hope for today was just that you would be more open. You'd be more aware, so that we could all eventually, maybe even over the next couple of weeks, experience more emotional hygiene. This is what emotional hygiene might look like for you and for me, is just number one, to recognize what we're feeling. To recognize what I'm feeling. Would you be willing to just stop and go, I'm just going to recognize it. I'm just going to be aware of it. I'm just going to be curious about it. And then maybe over the next couple of weeks, we can figure out, well, how do we know what to do with it? How do we know what to do with what we're feeling? I know this seems elementary, but I just know that for me, one of the things that stands between me and my wife too often is that I don't enter into what I'm feeling or what she's feeling. I don't want my kids to get to be an adult and say, my dad never really knew my heart. Yeah, he knew my schedule, but he didn't really know my heart. I don't want my friends to say, yeah, I mean, he was around, but he was never really present. He was never really paying attention to what was really going on. And I'm telling you that the thing that stands between you and a better you, you and a healthier you, might just be what you're feeling. Might just be your emotions. So here's what I would love to do. Just because we have the time and because you're here and you're watching, and why wouldn't we? I would love to spend a couple of minutes asking our Father in heaven to help us with this. It seems elementary, but too often we start digging into ourselves and we forget to say, and Father, I know that you love me and you want this for me, but it takes some humility to say, God, we need help. Here's the beauty of our Heavenly Father is he says, I am not going to leave you to go do that. I'm going to go and enter into it with you. I'm going to be a part of the process. I'm going to be a part of the journey. That's what God seems to really love, is when we take him ourselves and say, we're inviting you into the process with us. Another thing David wrote, Psalm 51, he said, God, you do not delight in sacrifice, or else I would bring it. You don't take pleasure in burnt offerings. People would have these extensive, intricate processes to go bring to God what they thought he wanted, when the whole time David says, what you want is me. He says, my sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. You, God, that's what you will not despise. Maybe the greatest thing that God wants for you is just you to go, God, I want to figure this out. I don't want this to cause problems with other people in my life. And I'm inviting you into the process. So we're going to sing a song together. You're welcome to respond to it however you want. The song is called Gracefully Broken. And it's basically just an invitation. It's an invitation that we offer to God to say, God, we know that there's stuff that just like that egg that fell off the wall and we tried to put it together and we weren't quite sure how to. And so we just pushed it to the side and it's broken. And we're inviting you to step into the process with us and help us put it back together so that we can be more whole, so that we can be more healthy, so that we can know you more, so that we can follow you in a closer way. So I would love to invite you just as a practice to try this out, to experience him, to invite him into your emotions, to invite him into your feelings, and then we'll see what happens as a result of it.